I want to talk to you a little while about a story from the Scriptures that talks to us about lions. Now, normally, or at least for me, when you think of lions in the Scripture, the first story that comes to mind is Daniel. And we'll mention his story today, but that's not the main story I want to talk to you about. And if I were digging a little deeper, I would think about the story about David. David killed a lion with his hands, and that's pretty impressive as well. And we're going to, but we're not going to talk about that story either. Matter of fact, the guy that I want to talk to you about today is probably a story that you have not heard. I'm not saying you haven't ever read it, but it's not one of those stories that sort of jumps off the pages and leaps into our mind's eye quickly. Matter of fact, I've read through the Scripture, and this guy sort of I didn't catch several times through. But today I want to talk to you about chasing lions on a snowy day, because there's a man in the Scripture who did exactly that. And we'll talk to you about him a little bit and then see what we can learn from that for our own lives as we seek to be people who are willing to chase lions for Christ in this day. And we'll try to make a little more sense of what that might look like for your life and mine as we walk onward with Christ. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, just as sort of a launching point for this talk this morning, "For God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." God has called His children, His people, to be people that step forward, not in a confidence born out of what we have to offer, but a confidence that's born out of who our God is, to step forward with courage. It seems to me in this hour that that's one of the pressing needs within the body of the church, is that we would be courageous for Christ. To be courageous to step forward and to do what He's calling us to do in this hour. Not to be obnoxious, not to be something that just is outside of our character, but to walk in the strength of our God to do what God would like us to do. When I read through the Scriptures, and Old and New Testament alike, and you read the stories of God, people of God who did what God called them to do, they did some amazing things. They prayed for some amazing things to take place, and God stepped in and God did some amazing things. And we don't have time to go through a whole long litany of that kind of list, but think of it. Think of Moses standing at the Red Sea. He's led the children of Israel out of Egypt, and they've got to the Red Sea, and they look and they see the body of water. They look the other direction, and they see the dust of the chariots of the Egyptian army chasing them down. And that would seem to be a little bit of a quandary that you're in. And what God gives him as instructions is to go and take his arms with the rod and to part the waters. Now, I can kind of think that there's a few questions that I would have about that time. What in the world is that going to do? I mean, waving my arms over a sea, what in the world is that going to do? But what did it do? It brought the wind of God's Spirit to push the waters back and create a path which, in His finest dream, He could not have envisioned what was going to take place. But God brought deliverance. For Joshua, who stands forward and is instructed by God to march around the walls of Jericho, once a day in silence for 6 days. And I'm amazed. I mean, I've been leading church people for quite a long time, and to have 6 days of silence, that's a miracle in and of itself. And to not have, about 3 days in, I could just sort of envision the idea of, okay, now Joshua, do you have any clue what we're doing? What's really going on here? And then to come on the seventh day and to march around it 7 times, and then to shout, and the walls come down. I say those things merely to get us to understand, you know, when we read these stories, let's not just be amazed and amused, but let's recognize that we serve the very same God who's able to do the very same things in this day. His arm is not short. His power is not diminished. He still can take that life that's bound in sin and break those chains and bring deliverance and bring freedom to the captive soul. Now, talking about lions, The man that I want to talk to you about today is Benaiah. Benaiah comes to us out of the book of 2 Samuel. It's when David is sort of at the tail end of his kingdom, and he's giving us a list of some of the men of great renown. And this man that we're going to talk to you about today is not among his top three. But he's among his top five. He didn't make the three list, but he did make the top five list. He's quite the man. He was a valiant fighter, great exploits, struck down, killed a lion, snatched a spear out of the hand of an enemy, and killed him. He came out into that fight with a staff in his hand, took the spear of the Egyptian, and killed him. He was a mighty man. He was, like I said, one of the top five soldiers. He was a general in the army, and he was the captain of his bodyguard. Matter of fact, after we read and look a little bit into the story of what this man had to do with a lion, I kind of think that when David caught sight of that, he thought, this guy would be a good guy to be watching my back. You know, it's the kind of guy that you could walk with into difficult scenarios and walk with confidence because of his strength. In 2 Samuel 23, it says, he also went down into a pit on a snowy day and killed a lion. This is just me, and I'm not trying to put something there that's not there in the story, but think of this story for just a moment. And put yourself in the shoes of Benaiah. You're chasing a lion. That in of itself seems a little strange. I mean, I've not been around a lot of lions, but a few years ago I had the opportunity to go to Mozambique on a mission trip. And one of those days that after we had come out of Mozambique, we were in South Africa in Johannesburg, and we went to a park that's called the Lion Rhino Park. And it was a park where you could go in, drive into different enclosures where animals from Africa were in those enclosures. And so we drove into the enclosure where the lions were, and we're riding along with, I'm in the front seat, and the guy next to me is sort of the leader of this whole mission enterprise, and he's telling us everything he knows about lions, and then maybe a little bit beyond that even. He had lots of stories to tell. And so we drive down, and we're looking in this enclosure in this grassy field for the lions, and finally we find this pride of lions laying down underneath the shade tree. Now, one of the instructions that we had was we were needed to stay in the vehicle, which I had no problem with that. And we were also to stay on the paths, on the roads. And we got down near where these lions were, and there was sort of a two-tracker. Not really part of the roads, but it was two-track, so it looked like a road. Enough to satisfy this guy who wanted to get us as close to the lions as he could. So he proceeded to back the vehicle down this two-track, where we had lions on both sides of the van. I had a male lion on my side that was about 6 feet away from my window. Now, my window's open, and he did instruct us. He said, don't stick your arms out, because anything sticking out of the van, they sort of think of as meat, as they're fed on Sundays. We were there on a Monday, so we were on a good day. They probably weren't hungry, but I tell you, I had no problem keeping my arm in the window. Matter of fact, the longer we sat there, the more I began to feel like, you know, I wouldn't even mind if the window went up. You know, I would have been fine looking through the glass instead. But those lions, one thing that really struck me, and this is going to sound so elementary, but lions are big. I mean, they are a massive animal, and I would not want to have one chasing me. And I tend to think that if I ran across one in the wild, I would want to go the other direction. But Benaiah chased the lion. But he did more than that. He chased the lion into a pit, and when he got him in a pit, I'd call that good. I'd think, you know, that's pretty successful. We'll just sort of call it good and not worry any further. But he chased the lion into the pit, jumped into the pit, and killed the lion. He was the courage and the tenacity to get the job done just stands up as a testimony that is amazing to me. But that's the kind of guy Benaiah was. So I want to talk to you about a different kind of lion that we need to be chasing. I'm not advocating today that we all go try to find a lion and go run after it. But if we consider what might be a lion in your life, I believe the church needs more lion chasers in this hour. people that are willing to listen to the voice of God and to go in the direction that He leads. And to recognize that if we're going to be a faith-filled people in this hour, really a people of faith, we have to be that kind of person that's willing to step forward and to do what God has called us to do in this hour, to be the instrument in His hands that brings honor and glory to God. So, as I talk here this morning about chasing lions and what lion chasers are like, my prayer for you is to consider what might be the lion that God wants you to chase. It sort of goes to the whole issue of the Scripture when it teaches us about being a disciple of Christ is that we will carry His cross, the cross that He has for us. And just to make sure that we're sort of on the same wavelength, sometimes I think we've mistakenly thought that the cross that we have to bear is the challenges from past life, sin that might have lingered or easily besetting sin, but that is not the cross of Christ for us. The cross of Christ for us is what He is giving us, not what we've brought on ourselves. Now, He gives us strength to overcome because that's why He died on the cross. That's why He gave His life for us, is that He took your sin there, and that sin has been forgiven, and you have His strength to come to bear in the course of your life. But He has a cross for you to carry. And He tells us in Matthew that His burden is light. His yoke is easy and His burden is light. But He wants us to do something for Him that brings honor and glory to His name and advances His cause in this hour. So, lion chasers, there's some characteristics about lion chasers that I think we need to remember and understand that can be helpful to us. And the first thing that lion chasers understand is that the bigger their God is, the smaller their lion becomes. The bigger your God is, the smaller your lion becomes. Going back to the story of me in Mozambique or in Africa looking at that lion, the longer I looked at him, the bigger he got. The more I began to understand, you know, what could happen if he came at me, what would happen next? But the more we focus on who our God is, the smaller our lions become. The smaller the issue, the giants in our life look to us as we truly understand the size and the power of an almighty God that went to the cross to die that we could have life. So it's clear that we need to understand that and come to terms with that in our own spiritual journey. Sometimes our eyes get somewhat clouded with the issues of life, the challenges that face us in this life. And then when we get focused in on who God is, all of a sudden those things begin to shrink in size, and we believe that we can do what God's called us to do. In Daniel chapter 6, the classic lion story, it says there, when King Darius came near the den, and remember this story, let's just make sure we're all on the same page of what this story is all about. Remember Daniel, faithful man of God, faithful in his prayer life. And through his prayer life, he was bothersome to others in the kingdom. He was doing what was right. He was, and they couldn't find anywhere to pick at him. He was a straight shooter, and he wasn't doing anything in a wrong kind of manner. And so they said, well, the one thing we could do is we could make the king outlaw the fact of praying to any god except the king. And they played on the king's own vanity and got an edict that once the king found out what was the truth of the whole story, he was not a happy camper. Matter of fact, Darius had a much more unsettling night than what Daniel did. He was up all night walking, trying to figure out what in the world's going to happen to this prized servant that's working for my kingdom. But it says to us, when King Darius came near the den, after a night, he's been there in a den of lions, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue from the lions?" Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions." This is the God that can do all things. This is the God to whom there is no limitations. There's nothing that He cannot do And for Daniel in that moment, he shut the mouths of the lions. Now we could think about as to what that night might have been like for Daniel. And I'm not here to say that he snuggled up with the lions that night. He maybe did, but I don't really think he did. But I kind of think that he had a much more restful night than the anguished King Darius. And it wasn't that these lions were not hungry. We know the end of this story is when the king grabbed a hold of the guys who had done this in the first place, who had passed and played on his vanity. He took those men, threw them into this same den, and it tells us that their bones were broken before they hit the bottom of the den. That wasn't a fact that, oh, they're already filled up and they're not even hungry. That wasn't the case. But God protected him. Remember what we said. The bigger your God is, the smaller your lions become. So the question for us today is, how big is your God? What are you able to trust Him with in your context of your life? It's one thing to come to camp and talk about Jesus and to honor Him and just talk about Him as a great and powerful God. But what about in your life when you, Monday morning, when you get up and you face the challenges of life, are you still serving a big God? Is He still able? Do you trust Him with the details of your life? Does your life reflect that kind of relationship, that kind of trust factor working in you and through you to accomplish His plan and purpose? Lion chasers understand that. A second thing that lion chasers understand is that playing it safe is actually risky. I'm not saying that we ought to all go out and jump out of an airplane. That's something we would consider risky. I'm not saying we all ought to go and do a bungee jump, which we would think is risky. But I do believe that we need to be willing to take risks for God. Sometimes we refrain at that. It tells us in the Scriptures a number of statements that speak to that. And it tells us without faith it is impossible to please Him. He tells us that we should live by faith and not by sight, that we should be willing to do what He's called us to do. Going back to Africa, when I was the first year I was there, which was about 4 years ago or so, I went out to on a Monday morning. We'd been in a church on Sunday and preached and shared in a church, that an established church. But then we were going out to a village to help plant a church that week. And I had a partner with me whom I just met when we got over there. Went with our interpreters and we headed down into this little village called Massagir in North Mozambique. And we met together with a few people from the church that were also helping in this project, and we prayed together, and then we headed out in two different groups to go and just talk to families, talk to people, and share the message of Jesus Christ. We got out there, and of course there's a little bit of a language issue. We've got two translators, one guy that's taking my English and taking it to Swahili, and then another guy that was taking the Swahili and turning it into Makua, which was the language of the people. And so we're out there, and the pastor of the church had led us to a particular house, brought a little bench out, set it underneath a shade tree in the middle of the street area, which is sort of a dusty path. And we sat there, and he left. And so we're sitting there, and we're really, you know, we're not sure what to do next. But we're sort of the strange folks, because we've got white skin, and we were in a place where there wasn't any others like us. And so people begin to congregate. And before long, we've got about 40 people sitting there, moms and kids and dads and just a mixture of people. And so I'm thinking, you know, we're going to fly all the way here to Africa to sit on a bench and look at people across the way. We came to share the gospel. So I just stood up and called the interpreters over and said, we're going to jump in and do it. And so I began to share the story, and they had asked us to share our testimony. And so I shared my testimony of my coming to faith in Jesus Christ and what difference that had made in my life. And I'm looking in their eyes and I'm saying, you know, there's something I don't know. It's not connecting. And I just, so I knew that as someone who's spoke quite a few different times, to know they weren't really responding. So I didn't want to pull any kind of net in and give an invitation. So I decided, well, okay, I'll tell another story about what Jesus Christ and coming to Christ. And so I told the story about God and man and the separation that came and built the cross, and how the cross of Jesus Christ takes us to Him, that we can have a relationship with Him. And it wasn't connected. Looked in their eyes, and I'm just saying, no, something's not right here yet. And so that morning, before I left camp, I had heard a lady from South Africa who was helping in the camp setting. She was telling a group of people from, there was about 13 of us on the team, but she was telling some people a story about three hearts. And it's sort of an approach to sharing the message of Jesus that I'd never heard before, but I caught enough of it to pick up, okay, I see where that story's going, and that's sort of a cool way to get the story out. And so I thought, okay, that'll work. So I made my first mistake of that moment there was a kid sitting right in the front in the dust, and I reached to, he had a stick in his hand, and I just said, reached to him and said, could I have your stick? Well, of course, he had no idea what I was saying, and he saw my movement towards him and thought I was going to do something to him, and so he went running like a rabbit about 20 feet back just to get clear of me. And the interpreters knew what I was trying to do, and so they got me a stick. The boy came back, and I drew in the sand the story of three hearts. And that first heart was God's. When we first were created, we were created with a clean heart. Adam and Eve had a perfect heart. But because of sin, it brought a mark on that heart. And so I drew a mark on that heart, and I began to talk about what that looked like. And then the sins, other kinds of sins that we added to that whole thing. And so we had a heart with that original mark on it. And then the sin that we committed in that second heart. And then I said, I drew another perfect heart, another heart here to the side. And I said, because man's wanted to have a relationship with God and wanted to have a clean heart, the only way to get that heart is through Jesus Christ, and through the cross, and told that story. And the light bulb went off. And I began to ask them, would you like to have a clean heart? And which of these hearts would you like to have in you? And they just start responding that they want that clean heart. That's the kind of heart they would like to have. But about that time, there's a little bit of a stir from my interpreters, and I know something's up. And they translate to me that I am needed at the back of this group. And I look up, and in the back, the pastor now is returned, and he has a guy with him, dressed in the Muslim garb. And so I went back, and they interpret for me what he was. Happened to be the head man of the village, whom the pastor had gone to get permission for us to share the message of the gospel. And that's what I'm doing. But when we... The final answer to that whole thing is the headman said, you are welcome to share your story. You know what I think is that the story that I told, the headman heard and said, if that's the kind of story they're going to be telling, there's nothing bad about that story. I don't mind people in my village having a good heart towards God. And because I was willing to step forward into what, for a moment, was a little bit of risk, I didn't realize it until I realized that this guy is both Muslim and the headman of the village, and we didn't already have permission. I sort of thought we maybe already did, but it was the message of the gospel that we were able to share. And in that village, over the course of that next week, we saw 262 people come to faith in Jesus Christ. Planted a little church and preached that Sunday in a little open-air service in Massagir. And I was back the next year, and that church is still functioning and going, sharing the message of the gospel, seeing lives transformed and touched. Willing to... And I must confess, I didn't think of it so much as being risky as I just didn't come to Africa to sit on a bench to impact and to share the message of the gospel with people that never had heard and needed to know where light could come from and where hope could come from in their life. Friend, in the course and journey of our lives, I think that there are times when there might be a friend or a loved one where you wonder whether, okay, what if I share my faith and it sort of drives a wedge in our relationship, and I'd rather have a relationship with them rather than see them make heaven their home? Not sure how it weighs out then. Sometimes we need to be bold enough to say, I love you so much. I care about you so much that I need to share the message of the gospel. I need to build that bridge again. And I think God can give us grace to be able to share it in such a fashion that it's not destructive to relationships, but rather it's building to them. And that we build those bridges and we're willing to walk across them and take that risk. I have a brother who is not a believer. My oldest stepbrother is... We spent the night with him just before we came up here to camp. About 2 years ago, I built a bridge into his life. Because our paths of our lives have been separate so much that I just didn't know him all that much. He's 61 years old, so he's several years older than me. But I built that bridge back as God allowed us to, back, like I said, several years back. And we've continued to build relationship, but we once again broached that bridge Thursday night. He hasn't come to Christ yet, but I gave him a resource or book I want him to read, and I'm going to see him in 3 weeks. And I said, if you'll read the book, then we'll just talk about it. And he said, you know, I'm not convinced at all. And I said, that's okay. I still love you, and I don't want to go to heaven and not have you there too. And yet I want to go to heaven. So I'd like you to be there. I love conversation with him. So I said, I'd just like you to. I don't want them to end because death comes and you go another direction. And every time I broach that subject, you know, I take that step in the sense of I don't want to destroy a relationship, but I care too much not to raise the topic. Friend, we've got to be willing to take some risk in order to see the message of the gospel go forward. And so I encourage you to be in tune to God's Spirit and be listening to Him and be willing to chase that lion in the course of your life so that God's work might go forward and His cause might be advanced in these days. The third thing that lion chasers understand is that the first step is always the most difficult. You know, once you get to chasing the lion and the lion's going the other direction, it's not all that hard to keep running after. It's a matter of whether he's going to run at you or you're going to run at him is oftentimes where the tough thing is. And to be willing to broach that step that says, I'm going to be used by God in this moment, in this time, to chase that lion and go forward. That we're not sure exactly how it's all going to come out, but we know that God is leading, so we're moving. I'm not asking you to go and just run at any old thing that lays out there, but listen to the voice of God and be willing to chase that lion for His cause so that the work of Jesus might go forward, that His name might be lifted up in the course of our lives. That we not be distracted by what ifs that could happen. What if it doesn't work out? And quite frankly, there's many things that God has desired for His people to do in this hour that have just sat on the sidelines because we've been uncertain as to how it's all going to pan out in the end. How's it all going to happen? Or, you know, we read the stories of the Scriptures and we think of the stories from a standpoint, they're amazing stories because we know the end. We know how it all comes together. We know the end story. We know that David running down to face Goliath in the valley is running down to face the giant and he wins the battle. We know that the stone hits him and Goliath falls and victory comes and the Philistines are destroyed. We understand the end of the story and we'd say, well, yeah, if I could walk with David, I'd love to walk with David. It's a different matter to walk with David when you don't know the end of the story. And if you haven't seen those moves of God in your life like you'd like to or like you think others are seeing, maybe it's because you just haven't been willing to trust Him and to take the step of saying, okay, by God's grace and His help, we're just going to move forward. We're going to do what God's called us to do. We're going to be engaged in this message of Jesus Christ. We're going to be dispensers of His grace into the hearts and lives of others, that we can see His move, the movement of God, go forward in this hour. That's His challenge to our lives. That's my challenge to you. To be a people who are willing to say, I don't know what tomorrow holds, but I know who holds it. I'm going there. I'm walking forward. I'm moving in the direction that God is leading. In the course of our lives, over the journey of life, God has led us every step of our life together, as I think of my wife and I. And it's, quite frankly, I go back about 12 years ago. We were at Pleasant Valley Church in Lake Odessa, Michigan, and we were enjoying God's blessing, and the church was growing, and good things were happening, and we had just come off of a Sunday where people had sought the Lord, and it was one of those days as a pastor you just go home and you think, this was good stuff, and God's Spirit was moving, and my wife and I looked across the living room together that afternoon and said, something's wrong. Because in our heart, we thought, we knew that we had a great day. But God began to stir in our hearts that we were done at Pleasant Valley. And it's like, no, Lord. It's not the right time to go. And the reason I thought it was not the right time is because our son, our oldest son, was going to be a senior in high school the next year. And I tried to make a little bit of a deal with God. I don't advocate making deals with God. We're not smart enough to make a deal with God. I believe that with all my heart. And my deal fell through. I tell you that too. My deal was, Lord, if you'll let us stay here one more year, we'll get Josh graduated, and then we'll go anywhere you want us to go. And the Spirit of God spoke to my heart very clearly and said, don't you think that if I want you guys to move, it's not just because of you, but it's because of Him. I want Josh in a different spot. Well, that's a different idea. That's a cool concept. But Lord, could you convince Josh of that? If you convince Josh of that, I'm good with it. Because, and to make a long story short, at that point in time, when that God stirred our heart, the church that we ended up in was not even an open church. So it wasn't about going to Colwood. It was just about being open to whatever God had in mind for us to do. So we made ourselves available to the stationing team. And by the time that it all worked out, they had us going to Colwood or considering a couple churches. And eventually that came to the surface as where God was leading us. When I began to explore Colwood in Carroll, Michigan, I came to find out that Carroll High School didn't have a soccer team. And our son was an avid soccer player. So it's like, God, now, you know, that just doesn't seem to work. So I looked a little bit around the area and I found a Christian school that was about 25 miles south of us from Carroll that did have a soccer team. And so we thought, okay, well, then that could work. He could go to school down there, and that would not be a bad thing. Make a long story short, when I shared this story with my sons, sitting there in our living room at Pleasant Valley, and said, I believe God is leading us to leave here and to move to Carroll, Michigan, to take the pastorate at Colwood. And I said, you know, Carroll doesn't have a soccer team, but North Branch Wesleyan does, and that's a school within 25 miles. We could do that. That could work. And Josh looked across the room at me, and he said, if it's God's plan, let's do it. That was the amount of problem that came from my son. God was very faithful in his part. I look now to that back, looking back up the road, and I see how God's hand was so much in it, not just for us, but it was so in it for him. His wife came from that church. Our daughter-in-law came because we went to Colwood and pastored there. His senior year of high school, his soccer, he had his best season ever. They were, made it further in the state tournament than that school had ever made it. They had a great season. He had a great year, made All-State there. Just so many things that I would look back to that story and say, God, clearly, maybe that move was more about Josh getting to the right spot than it was us getting to the right church. I don't know. But God blessed our church as well. And I give Him praise and glory because we were willing to listen to His voice and to step into what looked like to be a risky kind of thing. Matter of fact, when I tell that story to a lot of pastors, there's almost like this gasp of, you moved before the senior year of your son's high school. You know, how embittered a child can be when you do certain moves in the course of their life. But that's not what transpired in our life, and that's not what's happened in his life as well. Trusting God, taking the next step is that first step to get started, to say, today, I'm going to chase the lion that has been lurking, that's kept me at bay from doing what God really wants me to do. Because I think that's what our lions do, is they sort of freeze us right where we're at. Instead of saying, okay, but what could go wrong? And we oftentimes can give long lists of what could go wrong, but the fact is that if we serve a God that's able and we learn to listen to His voice and to be responding to Him, He can do great and mighty things and help us to be overcomers in this day. That we would win what God has for us to win in this hour. That the cause of Christ might go forward in the course of our lives. Chasing lions on a snowy day is just a delightful kind of story to my heart. Because it really focuses our attention on what God's about. Being people who are willing to follow close after Him, to experience His love and His grace in our lives. And my challenge to you today, and how I'd like to wrap this thing up, and I know we're going to sing in just a moment a song that always has blessed my heart. My challenge to you is to, how many of you are willing to chase your lion? How many of you are just willing to say, Lord, whatever it is in my life, the thing that has kept me from doing what I wished I would do, but I just feel don't have the courage or the faith to step up, step out, and do it. I just encourage you to take a step forward for God and say, by His grace and His help, I'm going to do it. And it might be scary and it might be difficult, but trust your God. He's the God that any story that captures your imagination from the Scriptures, read it and claim it and say, it's the same God today. It's the same God that causes Joshua to stand before his God when the battle is going on and they're winning the victory. And he knows that darkness is coming. And he says, God, could you stop the sun? And could you set the moon? And just give us some more time? And they'd had a successful day. And it'd been so easy to say, isn't God good? He's done what He said. But we just need more time. And he prays for a longer day. And God stops the sun and gives them an extra 24 hours. Now we read that story and we say, you know, that's sort of a cool story. And it's really cool when you start looking at long-term calendars and you find that there's that period of a day that sort of messed up in the whole thing that was because God stopped that whole thing. What blows my mind is that Joshua prayed the prayer in the first place. I mean, which one of us would have the courage to say, God, you said, and he had God's promise. He said, God, you promised us that we could have complete victory over the Amalekites. We don't have enough time, so we need a little more time. And he prayed, and God stopped the sun and gave them a longer day. He was a lion chaser. He was a man who was willing to take that next step and say, by God's grace and His help, I'm just going to do what He's called me to do in this hour to accomplish His plan. So I'd like, as we wrap this service up, and we've got some other things that we'll do at the end of this whole thing, but I'd like you, if you want to chase the lions in your life, if you just want to step forward, I know we don't have a place to kneel, but we could just gather and stand. And I'd like to just pray together with us. that God would encourage our hearts to be the lion chasers for Him in this hour to make a difference for Jesus Christ. I believe that leaving the camp and all of the encouragement and strength that comes from being together with friends and family who share a common faith, the power of the church and the power of the camp is always when we walk out of here to disperse to where we live, to be the light for God where we're at. I've told my church at Colwood many times, is when we gather, it's fun and exciting, but our strength is when we walk out of these doors and we're the light where we need to be so that we can bring others to Jesus and bring them to church to be blessed together again.